Welcome to episode 25 of the Just Keep Spinning podcast. My name is Andrea and I'm here with...
I'm Andrew.
And we have a very special guest today. We are actually here recording at Grand Avenue Records with the record store owner, Coco. Coco, say what's up.
Yo, yo, what's happening, people?
So, let's see. This week, we actually do have quite a few events we're going to highlight. So, I'll give it back to Coco so we can do that.
All right. So, December 8th, we are kicking things off. We got Downtown Phoenix Record Show, which is going down at Crescent Ballroom. Previously, last year's Crate Diggers flipped to honor the city of Phoenix. So we're coining it Downtown Phoenix Record Show this year and moving forward. Also celebrating our after party that night at the Valley Bar, which is our monthly get down called Loose Joints. And celebrating 2 years. We have special guest Zernell coming through from L.A. by way of Chicago, Grimy Edits. And we are also celebrating 2 years of the grand opening for the record shop, Grand Avenue Records. So we got a lot to celebrate. It's going to be going off, yeah.
A lot of good stuff going on.
Yeah.
For sure.
And really quick, our Instagram is Just Keep Spinning Podcast. Our email is justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to say you love us, you hate us, you want to send us music to feature, anything like that. And Coco, are there any social media handles you want to give out?
Yeah, our social media for the record store is Grand Avenue Records, spelt out, both for Instagram and Facebook. And I can be reached there. And yeah.
Check and out. Then the record show Instagram, right?
Oh, and then the record show, of course, thank you, is dtphxrecordshow@gmail.com for any inquiries, and also dtphxrecordshow@Instagram as well as Facebook.
How do you keep that all in your head and organized? It's a lot to remember.
Yeah, you know, it gets me sometimes, but it's consistency. You do it enough, it's just like embedded.
In your head, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I have it tattooed on my wrist. So
a little cheat sheet wherever you go.
Yeah.
Also, if you on iTunes or in Spotify or whatever you listen, please rate and review. That helps us out, like get, you know, noticed, I guess.
Helps us get out there a little bit more.
So, yeah, spread it around.
Spread the word.
So we did events. So, oh, it's my segment, right?
Yes.
So do you know the number one song on the date of your birth?
On the date of my birth?
Like actually the day you were born, what the number one song was on the Hot 100.
Damn, I knew you guys were going to ask that because I listened to the show and you know, I didn't bother to look. Man, I don't know. The Bee Gees have something to do with it?
No, the number one song was Fallen in Love by Hamilton, Joe Frank, and Reynolds. Wow.
I don't even know if I know that song.
I don't know that song.
We're going to have to look that up.
And so 1989 would be when you were 14, correct?
Yeah.
So again, when you're 14 years old, on the date of your birth, the number one song during that week should define your life. We do it by Hot 100 because that was like the most popular songs. So I always do the top 10 just to...
89, yeah. There's definitely some MJ in there.
You ready?
Yeah, let's hear it. Do the rundown.
Number 10, So Alive, Love and Rockets.
Oh, love that song.
I was so loved. Oh,
seriously.
Number 9, Secret Rendezvous, Karen White.
Nice. Nice.
Number 8, Bat Dance, Prince.
Oh, okay, of course.
Man, really?
Yeah.
No way. Yeah. So far, I own every single one of those records.
I Like It, Dino.
Got that sitting right there. No way. Really?
Yes.
Dino was on the list?
Yes. Number 6, Hanging Tough, New Kids on the Block.
Of course. Yeah. Even though I wasn't a New Kids fan, like, for some reason, I had a dance routine to that song.
Of course you did.
Yeah, so weird.
Number 5, Great White, Once Bitten, Twice, something I can't remember.
Never was a Great White fan.
Gloria Estefan, Don't Want to Lose You.
Gloria Estefan?
Yeah.
Estefan. Say that right, dude.
Estefan.
Gloria Estefan.
Estefan.
All right.
Don't disrespect her.
I disrespect her myself right now.
You got my girl glow.
I know her son. He would be very pissed.
Oh. And just like, edit.
Edit. No, my bad. No disrespect to Gloria Estefan.
Gloria Estefan.
Number 3, Cold Hearted, Paula Abdul.
Of course.
Number 2, Bobby Brown, On Your Own.
On Our Own.
On Our Own.
It's from the Ghostbusters soundtrack.
Yeah.
And number 1, The Week of Your Birth. 1989, Richard Marx here, right
oh
here waiting.
Oh my God.
Really?
He's all disappointed. He's disappointed, guys.
Can I get some funk in there or something?
Nothing, dude.
Richard
I mean,
Marx? That's embarrassing.
That was just what it was.
All right.
You know, yeah, I don't understand. You know, sometimes we do it every time we have a guest, and every time we have a guest, we always have the same reaction. Like, that was my song. Like,
sometimes people get excited.
Yeah, but
I think it's great. That's cool. It's fun. It's a fun segment.
We try.
We try to be consistent.
We try to be consistent.
I can't wait to call my sister after this and tell her that, the Richard Marx has...
So did she like Richard Marx or no?
I mean, you know.
I mean, obviously...
It was on the radio, so...
Number one, so yeah. People did like him. Yeah. I remember that song, though.
Well, here's the thing is, you know, my family... I grew up in, you know, my family owned restaurants, like fast food restaurants, and, you know, we always had hip music playing, and that song must have came on, like, every 5 minutes. Which is weird to me. That's why I'm like, really? It really is, actually.
Because you really remember it.
Yeah. I'm like, I remember, like, eating french fries with ketchup and A1 sauce, and like that shit would come on.
Oh my God. So Coco, how are you doing? Just in general, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good. I'm just living and building. You know, record store, family life, and you know, just trying to get all my eggs in one basket. You know, obviously we have some events going on and I'm really planning for 2019. Trying to make some visions happen off of my vision board, one of them being the record label for Grand Avenue Records, which I am pushing to start releasing some stuff here probably the second quarter of 2019, and you know, which will be a lot of Arizona artists as well as remixes by national acts who are friends of mine, people that I work with, that, you know, I'll probably be calling on some favors.
That's good. That's good. Giving back.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Doing what you love and also giving back at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. You know, a lot of people don't know I'm pretty involved in not just the record community, but just the music community in general. I have my sister company, which is my first business, The Merch Pro. And, you know, I handle a lot of stuff for a lot of record labels and independent artists and some bigger artists. You know, I have some bigger artists that I'm working with, you know. Clients like, you know, Badu World, which is Erykah Badu's company. You know, I've worked with, like, Toki Monsta and, you know, artists like Para out of the Netherlands. And, you know, I could just sit here and name drop all day. I love my job. It all makes sense. So I have a lot of projects that are just unwinding and, you know, a lot of new stuff around the corner. So, I'm busy.
Which is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. Like, you're busy in a good way.
Yeah. I mean, you guys know. You come in here all the time. We're friends. And, you know, there's always something creative going on. So, you know, I like to keep it like that. You know, life is too short. You got to not talk about it and be about it and just make it happen. I truly believe in, you know, following your path to the best of your ability. And just, you know... You got to just go after it. And honestly, like the last 6 years for me here, you know, I've been a 360. I kind of was living like a gypsy.
Because you're not from here in Phoenix.
No, yeah. No. Yeah. I grew up south of Los Angeles in Orange County and literally just like a few steps south of Long Beach. Which is really where my roots are from. It's kind of where I honed my craft and, you know, connected with a bunch of people. So that is my first home. You know, I have a lot of dear friends there. I owe homage to just building my network and my drive and just, you know, everything that I have to this day that I keep pushing for really started there. And, you know, that's really where I planted my seeds. Been in Phoenix for about 6 years, came out here. I've been coming here since the early 90s, just doing DJ gigs. And
so when you used to come in the early 90s, what did you think about Phoenix?
Phoenix was weird, you know, definitely downtown, like specifically where this store is right here. I probably came here like a handful of times and it was not what it's like.
Not popping and
it was just scary. I mean, literally there was like pimps and like pushers and crazy stuff going on this. I mean, literally right outside this door. If you would have asked me then, first of all, would I even live in Phoenix? I probably would have been like, no, I'll go live in Hawaii or something, or live in Europe. But, you can't look into the future. So things just kind of happen. So fast forward about 6 years ago, I came through here doing a run of gigs. I was doing blunt clubs, two parties, and then I played over at Solstice, and I did like a gig at Sidebar. So I was just trying to really push music because that's what I do. I mean, you guys know me pretty well. It's what I do. I push music onto people and try to educate and do my part.
You share it.
Yeah, I just share. That's what it is. And you know, it's just a fun thing for me, getting outside of the box, going out of town, playing music. You know, I'm not like I wasn't like making big packets of money, you know, but I was paying for whatever flight or gas. I come out and stay with some friends and just really get to hang for a weekend and then on to the next city. So I used to do that. You know, I'd do like little West Coast runs. Wherever I can, I'd connect the dots. Basically, my own manager. I've had booking agents and stuff like that, but they never work as hard as I do. My expectations are way too high, and you kind of just can't wait around for people unless you're part of one of those big machines. So I met my wife at a gig, something I never thought I would do, is like, you know, meet someone at a party or, you know, that I would end up spending the rest of my life with. I met my wife, and I never left. I just kind of was doing the, okay, I'll come back to Phoenix for like a week. We're living right up the street right here on 9th Avenue and Roosevelt. And, we just kind of just did that. And, you know, there's only so much you could take of a long-distance relationship when you're, like, in love and, you know, you want to, like, pursue it and see what happens. So I took a plunge. You know, I wasn't really doing anything but the same stuff for like probably like 10 years in Cali. And I've always been told is, you know, when you get in that funk, it's you know, you get like that baseball slump. You just can't get out of it. The more you try, the more you get into it because you're thinking about it too hard. So, you know, I've had some friends around the world and just people that I talk to on a regular, and you know, one of the people that really shine a bunch of light on me. He was, my dear friend, Mr. Osunlade. He's, owner of Yoruba Records. Someone I just like, you know, I pretty much idolize him. I've learned a lot about music through him, and he's just an all-around great person. You know, he's just like, he knew I was stuck, and he asked me, like, you know, you got to just move forward and go seek something else, shake things up, you know. And that's pretty much what I did. And, of course, talking with people like my sister. And you know, it's hard to leave your family when you're like, you know, you're going to go leave your family and go to another state. You got nieces and nephews and godchildren. And, you know, it was really hard. And, my sister was one of those people that was like, you know, we're not going anywhere. Go check it out. If it's what you think it is, then you're going to win either way. And if not, we're not going anywhere. It's still here.
You can
here.
Come back home.
Yeah, it was scary, guys. You know, you got to understand, I was at a point in my life where it was beyond a slump. You know, I was just, like, into, like, stupid shit. I was partying super hard. Just no balance in life, you know. I was, like, in and out of these crappy gigs. You know, I had been laid off of working at one of my favorite record labels that was, like, pretty much my dream job at the time. At least I thought it was. This is my dream job now. I'm my own boss. But at the time, I was like, you know what? I got into this depression, and I was like, oh, my God, it's just the same thing. Like, Friday night, I got my party. Then I got my other party. And then it's the same faces at different places. And it's just, you know, I almost was, like, not liking playing tunes. It didn't have that little fire, that inspiration, you know, where you know, that created what I'm into right now. You know, it's been, you know, I've been over 30 years into this and
it
started.
So was it more like it felt almost like routine to you, like soulless, and you're just like, okay, this is just what I do now. Like, this is just,
well, it was just routine because, you know, you do too much of anything and it just sucks. So I'm just like, okay, cool. God, I got to go do this gig now when I could just be like home, just, you know, and just in a slump, just kind of weird, not, you know, wanting to hang out with people. And, you know, there was just nothing. There was no drive. There was no drive. So, anyways, I took a chance. I came out here, and I shook it up. I came out here with nothing. I didn't even have any money. I just came here with, like, a credit card. And, you know, my mother-in-law now, you know, she was super cool. We, like, I didn't pay rent for, like, 2 years here. I was just trying to get it together. And, you know, it was nice. It's, you know, when you have that cushion, it's cool. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would have been homeless. And then my wife just told me to start the company, the Merch Pro, which I started. And, you know, I was working for some other people doing some branding and other marketing stuff. And I kind of started the company, and I was literally working out of the house, in the back of the house, little by little. You know, I just literally put everything on the credit card. I got, like, my business license. It was, like, $300. I maxed it out and, like, just to start the business. And little by little, you know, I mean, I was in a hole. I wasn't, like, in a credit card hole. I didn't have, like, you know, $30,000 ran up on a credit card because I was, like, always scared of that shit. But, you know, I was like, okay, cool, we got to do some stuff on a budget. And that was, like, the one thing I was, like, on a budget, like, for a long time. But it worked out. And I was, like, looking for a space, like, 2.5, 3 years into it. Right, because I've been in this space for about 3 years, and then I started the store after. So how the store came about. So I need an office for the Merch Pro company. Got into the space with a friend, and he actually ended up going up to Northern California. He got some job at some big vineyard doing designs. So I just kind of stayed here. My wife had a company. She still does. It's called Cherry Bombin, and her studio was up the street, which is owned by my landlord. And, you know, I was looking for a spot. So I looked at a bunch of places on the street, man. I wanted to just, like, be in the area. And they were just out of my budget. I couldn't, you know. So we found this spot, and I had my friend. And we kind of just did a bunch of work. And I was like, I had this vision already. I was like, yeah, I'm going to have the office. But then I want my office to be a record store. You know, have all these records in storage. I'm going to finally go through them. So I'm talking thousands of records. So, dude, I came here with like 15,000 records, personal collection. So it took me a long time to go through them because, you know, everything has like a feeling. Every record has a feeling. You know, I'm like going through boxes and, you know, like, you know, having the hoarder mentality, like, oh shit, I can't get rid of this. I can't. There's no way. Yo, I played this gig in high school or whatever. I did a wedding with this and that and whatever. But then I was like, you know what? I celebrated these things enough. Let me put them into the store. Let me swat that fly that just went in my eyeball.
You say you want to put them back in the store and like put them back out there for other people, right? To share?
Yeah. So I opened up the store and really I opened it up with like two bins. And I don't know if you guys see those bins right there. The gray ones on this side. Those are from my original record store in Cali, Higher Source Records. So those were the first bins that were built. By Uncle Tony, and I had them in my storage. They were stacked with records, so I just brought them here. I got a U-Haul and brought them here, and literally I had a Honda Element at the time, and I was just doing
I have a Honda Element, so yeah, I love those things.
Stacking it with like 1,000 records. I mean, it was slammed, and I would just, first I started doing like 2 or 3 trips, and then I'm like, you know what, let me just get a U-Haul. Got a U-Haul, and that was the point that I committed to like actually being here. You know, because I was like, oh, you know, I just keep my records. Because it's like, once you move records, it's like, you don't really want to move them again. And that many records, you're just like, okay, I'm here. I'm done. It's like 15,000 records.
I mean, so were you, did you ever, though, have a moment where you were like, why did I do this? Or, oh, my God, like, because Andrew's brother moved from here to California. And he said that he moved his stuff or whatever. But the first night, like, he spent the night there, that he, like, had a freak out moment because he was like, this is it. This is what I'm doing. Like,
yeah. Yeah. No, I had that moment. It was scary. And it was right about when I was like, oh man, this is really getting serious. Like, I'm doing this. I'm really doing this. You know, at the same time, I was like kind of sad. I'm away from like my father and my sister, who I'm super tight with at the time. You know, I was like, we're just, you know, just tight. And then I just like slowly started feeling like growth, you know. So we got into the store. I had a couple bands. And it was cool. It was nice. And I was like, you know, I'm not stressing on it. You know, I'm not, it doesn't matter. The store could be open. It cannot be open. I'm here working. Someone could walk in, whatever. It, you know, just like anything. To me, I truly believe in, you know, grassroots building. And you have to take some time to, you know, see the growth. So I'm very patient. I take my time. Sometimes I make mistakes. I try to learn from them as much as possible. But the most important thing is you got to just be patient and just watch, you know, the seed grow. So my friend left. My wife, we had the other studio up the street. And I'm like, same landlord. I'm like, you know what? Just come in here. She brought her studio here. And, you know, we started doing our thing. And then slowly started building another record band, buying some collections here and there. You know, I had gone through all my records. I'd done a bunch of record shows, right? Because I was like, oh, I'm going to do this record show, that record show. It's just easy for me. I can go buy records, trade records, get rid of stuff, get rid of all those crappy, like, records that I've used, you know, used and abused, DJing and scratching and that, or just, you know, nothing I want to keep or I want to really sell in the store, which is crazy. Those records really help pay my bills. Those 50 cent and dollar records that I just had so many boxes of. Good stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't like Herb Alberts or nothing. It was like, you know, hip hop stuff, radio stuff.
Was there Andy El Martino in there?
Maybe. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
I'd beat the shit out of some El Martino.
Yeah. I mean, I know I gave away some records for, you know, good prices too at the time because I just like wasn't. Like on my game, you know, I wasn't, yeah. I was just like, I just want to get rid of this stuff. And I always
I just need
like,
to make some money and get rid of it.
Yeah. Which is fine. And then all these records just started coming to me. And then, yeah, we, you know, I got married, we had a baby. And then that was a whole other drive where I was just like, okay, this is it. I got to just make it or break it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just stayed on it. Merch company started doing really good. And that's a mosquito right there. Look out for that guy.
He's going to bite you.
So, yeah, then I just started just going for it. You know, I hooked up with Discogs and started running their whole merchandising program. And then just picked them up as a client for fulfillment. And... you know, then I picked up all these other artists and slowly started just helping build their brands. It's what I know how to do very well. And, you know, all those little things just really were stepping stones for, you know, where my goals are at right now. And I have quite a few of them. You have to. Definitely at my age, you have to have a bunch of goals. And I'm just chipping away at it, you know. It's making it organically grow. You know, I don't expect this store to like buy me a Maserati, you know.
Yeah,
you don't want to be Bunker Maserati.
You don't want to buy Bunker Maserati.
Yeah, it's a labor of love. You know, I own my own business, so you know, when you own your own business, you work way more than anybody that is employed by someone else. You wear every hat and you can't call in sick. So it has its ups and downs, but you know, the benefit is the growth. It's kept me on my toes, and it's kept me to make me want to do more and more within this culture, which is what I know. You know, I mean, you go back to the history. You know, I sat and showed you guys a bunch of stuff before we started the show just to kind of fill you in on some history of mine from doing events. But, you know, I've always worked in record stores.
Well, when did you start DJing exactly?
So I got into it in 88, 87. So 88, And then I really got into gigs. And when I mean gigs, I'm talking like, you know, doing mobile DJ stuff, really riding the coattails of some of my elders at the time. I'd say in 1990. And, you know, I was out to prove myself to myself, not to anybody else. I don't give a crap. I mean, you know, as a person getting into any craft, you know, you're going to have a little bit of an ego and you really want to prove yourself. But for me, I wanted to prove myself to myself always. I was like, okay, cool. I document everything. I make mixes all the time. To this day, I'm always making mixes of my tunes so I can listen to them. Because when you know the ins and outs of every song, it makes you a better DJ. You're only as good as you know your collection. So, you know, I, from a young age, and I don't even know where I got that from, to be honest with you. I don't know if I got it from, like, watching a documentary or, you know, no one ever told me, like, record yourself and listen to yourself all the time, whether it's your music or whatever. I was talking about the car test earlier.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, so that car test, you know, even when I didn't have a car, because I didn't drive till way later, you know, I was jumping in my dad's whip, my sister's car, and just like listening to all my mixes, and you know, always had headphones on. And it made me believe in myself. And you know, I mean, I have catalogs of cassette tapes here that I listen to this day. And you know, I impress myself, because even back then I was above average. And I'm my worst critic, because most artists are. But even back then, I was above average, and I amazed myself at some of those mixes and taking chances of stuff. So equally, I was doing hip-hop parties, and then I was doing house parties, like house music parties. And then I was doing the soul and acid jazz thing equally. So I had like these three scenes that I was really working hard to just be a part of and do my part. And for years I was the side room DJ at the raves, at the undergrounds. Like, I always played that side room, the eclectic room, the chill room, the ambient room, you know, the left field room. And, you know, even though I wanted to be the main room DJ, I accepted that that wasn't my seat at the moment.
You mean like because you had to put more time in, or you just felt like you were like, oh, well, this is actually suited to me a little bit more?
I was a student and I took the cards that I was dealt, because I just went with it. And because, you know, certain people or promoters or friends or whatever believed in me and wanted me to have that seat, you know, I respected it and I really appreciated it, and I did the best that I could. And then I would get into, like, you know, opening up and setting up, you know, the main DJ in the main room or whatever. And that, you know, that was cool, but it had its own frustrations too, because, you know, sometimes I'd set up some really big names and they just didn't come with it. I did, you know. But again, it was the drive that I had at the time. You know,
and because you're your own competition, basically.
Yeah, I was my own competition. I wasn't too worried about that person. I was worried about making the best presentation for the party, to get people to feel comfortable. You know, and I always believe in one thing. Like, you know, when you're doing your own events, and I've done hundreds, thousands of events that I threw myself, that I put together in production or whatever. And there's a couple of elements that I truly believe in that will make a party be successful, in the form of a vibe, which, you know, the vibration of the party is very important. Because, you know, I've been shot at a party, you know, because of just weird circumstances, shitty security, you know, just, you know, a person walks into a party and the security guard is an asshole and is like pushing or frisking or just judging. Guess what? They're coming in that party and they're going to be pissed. They're going to do some shit. So, you know, I went through experiences. I mean, I was 18 years old. I got shot with an AK-47 DJing at a party, you know, across the street from Disneyland. And it was like a very, very legendary party. I was playing funk. All these cholos came in And I actually had invited some of them because I was working at a grocery store at the time and invited some homegirl who invited her cousins, who invited their cousins. It was a mixed party. But again, the security guards gave them shit and they were pissed off. And then they sprayed the place. And I was innocent bystander. I told you guys when we started the show, I've started my career many times. That was the first time I had to restart.
Because what happened after that?
Well, I was scared to death. I didn't want to go out. I mean, you're 18 years old and you don't want to go out. I mean, you get shot. You see your friend nearly die. 17 people get hit. I mean, it's, you know, that's crazy.
You realize your mortality basically, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, stuff you only see on TV. You live in an experience and it's like, you know, it was like the most scary thing for me was like, oh my God, I got to call my dad. Tell him I got shot. You know, at a DJ gig, which he was like, you know, watch out.
So was he ever encouraging of you DJing or was he just like, oh, it's something he does?
Well, at first, you know, my dad, he came from a background of music, fashion. Him and my mom were very hip in Greece, which is where I'm from in the 70s. They're very hip family. But, you know, my dad also worked in Compton. You know, he knew Eazy-E. He knew the Williams sisters. He knew like all the people in Compton and like all the gangsters and seeing fools get shot in the face and shit like that, you know? So he had his, you know, the way that he looked at stuff. And for me being a young person going to parties, you know, he always told me it's like, you know, there's nothing but drugs there and this and that and violence and stuff like that, which I don't blame him because he was around that shit and he was right. I mean, I saw crazy stuff, but I didn't care. I was there for the music. I was there for, like, you know, putting out, you know, and celebrating the tunes that I was super into. You know, the people say, you know, music saved my life. It has for me many times. I'm sure it has for a lot of other people. I've had these conversations over and over and over again with people. You know, going back to that, just rebuilding from that, it was, you know, I was just like, for one, I couldn't walk for a long time. You know, just like.
Did you have to go to therapy?
I had to do therapy for like 6 months. And more than anything, I think I had like, you know, PTSD. Mm-hmm. I didn't even really know what that was.
At the time, yeah.
At the time. But I definitely had that because I was scared shitless. You know, I, senior year in high school, I didn't graduate. You know, I ran with the crazy crowd. But I wasn't crazy, but I ran with the crazy crowd. I was like the ringleader because I was a DJ playing all these clubs and stuff when I wasn't even 21. But I was playing, you know, I was just in the right place at the right time, and I just really worked for it. So anyways, I rebuilt that, and then, you know, I was working some retail spots, and then I landed my first record store gig, Be Nonstop on Melrose, you know, and when it was just popping off in Hollywood.
Around what year, like ballpark, what year?
It was like 94, 95 maybe. It was like 95 because I got shot in 94. So I'm going to say it was like a year after, maybe two.
So around 96.
Yeah, it's going to be between there, yeah. I learned a lot. Yeah, I mean, the people that were working there were all just now – you know, now they're just legends, but at the time they were still like doing a lot of traveling around the world and DJing. So, you know, I was filling in and I learned a lot of stuff. I met a lot of people. And I mean, our neighbors were like Denzel Washington and Spike Lee and, you know, Rod Stewart's driver would come in and drop off his kids and they'd hang out with me all day. I had a little DJ school I was doing. Babysitting on the side, like, you know, it was crazy, like, you know, all within this record store. And I learned a lot of stuff about art, a lot of stuff about music, and a lot of stuff about carrying yourself and throwing parties. And that for me personally, like, I did a lot of stuff before that, but that was the turning point to where I felt like, okay, I'm part of something a little bigger than my little bubble in Orange County. Because now I'm like driving to LA every day and I'm just hanging out with all the heads. And then people like Lady Kira from D-Light is coming in my store and shooting videos for like German MTV and like, you know, Brian Faustino and I'm sorry, David Faustino and Brian Austin Green. You guys know who that is?
Yeah, yeah.
Their parents became good friends with me, and they would come in, and I would pick out all their clothes and music, and they would just bring me cookies and shit. And I'm like, what the heck, you know? And that's when I realized, I was like, okay, a part of something bigger. And I just kept my mouth shut. And any offering, I took it, and I wasn't picky, because I was still a student. I mean, I'm still a student right now, but at that point I was a young student, and I just absorbed and just accepted as much as I could. And I did a lot of whack shit. I did a lot of whack gigs. But I did it with a smile, and I went in there, and you know, I've said this to kids that I've mentored, and I'm gonna say it to you guys too. It doesn't matter one person or 1,000. If you are chosen to go and be the entertainment and present music, you are the vessel. Go there and kill it. And it doesn't matter. Make grandma dance. Straight up.
Just get someone to dance.
Make grandma dance.
Because once grandma dances.
Yeah, that's it. And I did a lot of that stuff, man. I mean, and you know, and it helped pay the bills. And for me, my bills went towards records and sneakers and toys and stuff like that, because you know, I grew up without that stuff. I was just, you know, so all my money went into the craft, which is why I came here with like 15,000 records, because then it was like 25 years or so of collecting.
That's what you invested in. That was your,
yeah, I invested in that. I should have, you know, now being a business person, I could have invested in other things, but it led me to this, and I think I have a beautiful life. There's always room for improvement, but I like where I'm at right now. And I've met a lot of new people in my life, and this business venture that I have right now, I don't know how long it's going to last. You know, I mean, it's cool. I mean, I enjoy it. Maybe I might move to New York one day. Maybe I'll go back to Europe. I don't know, but I'm living in the moment and then making the best of it, and doing what I can to do my part within this community and other communities too, because I fondle with other stuff, and you know, still in Cali, and I have some connections around the United States and some in Europe. I have my hands on a bunch of stuff, but my home is here, and I'm trying to do as much as I can, and not just for myself, but people that are interested to jump on the boat.
You guys, willing to do their part.
Yeah. You guys know me, man. I mean, people walk in here and it's like, you know, I become instant friends with them. They're just drawn to me. It's the same thing with the records. You know, I don't have to work too hard to go find records. They will come here. They will show up. I'll get a phone call or whatever, you know. But, you know, short-term, long-term goals. Definitely have, you know, goals for my family, and I definitely have goals for my career. And I think everybody should have that mentality if they are, sane or insane, you know, it's very important to kind of just know where you're at and then where you want to be.
So would you say when you were going through the whole transition from moving from California to here at the time when you were kind of, you said in that weird spot where you're like, I'm not really driven. Is it because you felt like maybe you weren't clear about what your goals should be? So you're like, I don't even know what I'm driving to. I'm just kind of aimlessly going about doing what I know how to do.
Yeah. Honestly, I gave up hope, and I didn't give a crap about a lot of stuff. I was just like, didn't have. Yeah. Yes and no. When I decided to move here, I basically, yeah, I came here to pretty much retire. Not DJ.
Not do anything.
Not DJ. Not, you know, I wanted to have a professional career, which was my merch company. And, you know, all the other stuff just kind of happened.
So how did Loose Joints come about?
So Loose Joints. So, man, I try to come here. So, okay, I've always done parties. And like I said, I came here to pretty much, I was like, okay, I'm going to kind of call it quits and just kind of wind it down. But then I got to a point to where I was like, I was lonely without it. I had all this, you know, I had my wife and, you know, it was awesome, but I was lonely without being able to play records because I just did it for so long. And
that's your first love, right?
Yeah. And it really is therapeutic to me. Just the whole process, putting records together and, you know, promoting a party. The whole process is something that I am totally in love with, and I need it.
Well, that's what your roots are in, right?
Yeah, I need it. I need it to just kind of survive. Otherwise, it's like just depressed again. So, you know, I was trying to do like parties, and some people were hitting me up to do some parties. This is before I knew like a bunch of people that I know now. I just kind of knew other people that I've known for years. But yeah, I was just, you know, I did some parties. I did Soul Revival, where I used to do that at, oh God, what is that spot over there by Coopertown? They got like the ping pong tables and stuff. And
I think I know what you're talking
about. Boxing ring in there.
The Deuce.
Yeah. Yes. So yeah, my wife was a bartender at the Deuce, and you know, I was like, oh, this place is cool. I had no idea about that place. I just looked at it and I was like, oh,
it's a neat spot. Yeah.
Yeah, I can do something here. So I, you know, I started doing Soul Revival there, which was cool. I mean, one out of 20 people knew what I was doing. And I was playing 45s, dude. I went in there with like heady stuff, and I treated it like I was playing in like New York or London. Yeah. And I really went in there and I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to just rip this shit up. play tunes that are just, you know, I'll bring $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 worth of 45s and just play my most rare stuff and see what happens.
Have fun, right?
Yeah, have fun. So, you know, I was bringing my gear and this and that, and it just, it was not popping, dude. I mean, it was like they wanted to do the freaking, God, what is those popular dances?
Oh, like swing and stuff?
No.
Like, what do you mean? Like modern?
No, like hip-hop dances.
Okay, like the Dougie and shit?
The Dougie.
Okay, okay.
They wanted to do the Dougie. And I'm like, yo, I'm playing Motown, homie. You know? So, you know, that lasted for however it lasted. And, you know, I pick and choose battles. I play the Blown Club here and there. And then I was like, all right, I need to do something. So, you know, I started linking up with Degents, Alex, Degentrification, someone I admire, someone who I feel is such a big, big, big part of what is going on here in Phoenix. And is really, he sits, you know, in a place where he is his own man in what he does. And I love him for that. He is one of the most inspirational people I've seen DJ. And I mean that, and I've seen a lot of people, but the thing about Alex is he's got heart and passion, and that's lacking a lot in DJs. He is the real deal, and I saw something in him that, you know, I seen in people that I idolize when they play music and they deliver the message. So, you know, I did his parties, and then he invited me to Valley Bar, and Valley Bar for me, it's kind of like my dream place because it's a basement, right? And I was like, I've always wanted to do a party in a basement. So I went down there and just, you, I had a really good time. And yeah, I just slowly started to meet people, and I had an opportunity to do a night. And, you know, I was talking with David, who I'm going to introduce to you guys. By the way, David walked in here last night, 2 minutes after you guys walked out.
Oh, really? How funny. Yeah.
And I told him, and he's like, oh, yeah. And, you know, so anyways, that seed's planted. But I started talking with David, and David kind of just knew, sort of knew about me. Like, you know, the store had just barely opened up. I mean, literally, it just opened up. And
was it, this was after, because I remember we were kept trying to come by, but it was appointment only at that time.
Yeah. 2 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we were like, gosh, dang, we always miss it. So was this after like you opened it up, did your grand opening, or right before?
No, I was appointment only still.
Okay. So
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was right before, and literally the grand opening, all that stuff literally happened within a month. So he hit me up and I was talking with him, and I said, look, I don't just want to do a party. Right. I want to do something that maybe not now, maybe not 2 years from now, but something that could be consistent and something that could be a part of me that I can give back to the city. Right. Because if you go into something and you're like, I want to charge $30 at the door and do all this stuff, hey, that's not organic. And more than likely, it's not going to work. I wanted to do something that was just going to have a little longevity and be more of a brand. So the Loose Joints concept started with me in 2001. It was a series of tapes. I had done a series, the first one, which was Japanese release only. I did like 200 CDs. I'll give you guys a link.
Oh, yeah.
Killer mix. Really, really good stuff. And then I did a couple volumes. And, you know, I always knew. I was like, I'm going to do a party. I want it to be called Loose Joints because it really kind of portrays everything that I'm about as a DJ, right? Loose, and it's all my joints. And it's, you know, I could play, you know, dance classics. I could play funk. I could play disco. I could drop some techno in there, some deep house, whatever. I can make it all come together in a night. So, you know, I made it happen. So I kind of just did one or two, and then I was like, you know, I just want to do this every month. I don't care what day it falls on, because, you know, my abstract workshop parties were always the last Saturday of every month. So everybody knew, you know, if there was 4 months in 4 weeks in the month, is that last Saturday.
Always just the last one.
Yeah, it's the last Saturday every time. But I was like, you know what? I kind of just want to jump around and whatever's available, I just want to do a monthly party and really use the store also to be behind it and kind of just do me and then see what happens. Stay consistent. So I did a couple of them. I had some guest DJs, and then...
Well, how was the first Loose Joints? How was that night? Do you remember that night at all?
Yeah, it was cool. I got the recording. It was good. I played all night, and I did exactly what I wanted to do. Played all night. I came out with, like, you know, I probably brought 300-400 records with me. I had a table lined up. I got photos of it. And just did my thing. It was cool. I mean, the 4 hours went by so fast, and I was like, it's done? I could play another 5 hours. Easy. No problem. I got, like, I was so charged.
Did you feel re-energized in a way? Like,
yeah, and it kind of clarified a lot of stuff for me. And I, you know, I just had that feeling. Like, I've had, you know, when I met my wife, and I had when I had the opportunity to open the store, like, just big events in my life. I had that feeling, and I knew that I'm going to do it and stay consistent with it. So, you know, I'm not running the Paradise Garage or, like, any of these crazy legendary parties, but I'm doing a part of me. So I did a couple of them, and, you know, it was missing something. And, you know, I wanted to bring not only some of the people that helped me out just even get started in the city, but I really wanted to bring in my brother Santos, who really was someone that I can trust musically. Someone that knows me musically, and someone that I feel, I wouldn't say he's under the radar, because he's not trying to be like a superstar DJ, but I do feel like he's a Phoenix legend. I mean, he's done some amazing albums on Yoruba Records, and, you know, his contributions to the culture, phenomenal. I mean, when I met him, I had his record in my bag, and I was at the Hollywood Alley in Tempe. And when I met him, and someone said, "Do you know Saint?" And I said, "Saint, yes, Santos, right? My boy Hyder." He told me that. I'm like, "Santos, like Yoruba Records introduction." He's like, "Oh, you know?" And I shit you not. I mean, he's the best man at my wedding. And, you know, he's one of my best friends right now. Someone I could trust all around. You know. So for me, it was a no-brainer. I brought him in, and between him and I and a couple of our friends, because, you know, we have it's a free party, so there's a flow. People just come in and out. You got your regular party goers, but the real magic is in the front of the stage, and it's all the dancers who we both know and who I think have helped build the night. It's not just me and him. It's really the patrons that are the dedicated ones, you know, and they do the same thing for a bunch of other parties around town.
But they choose to come to Loose Joints, like, to spend
their time
there. They
come to Loose Joints, and they just as much as we put out, so do they, right? So it's like, you know, it's
give and take.
The ultimate relationship is the DJ with the crowd that's into the music that you're playing, and no matter what you play, they take it in. And that was my ultimate goal. I honestly didn't think it would happen, but I'm a person that sticks to his guns, and just I try to just believe in not myself but my brands and the things that I'm involved in, you know, and just really wanted to plant some roots and see what happens.
Well, what I like to when I go to Loose Joints is it's a diverse crowd. There's all different kinds of people getting down there. So that's what we like about it when we go to.
Exactly. Yeah, again, my ultimate dance party experience is, you know, dance like nobody's watching. You know, just get in there, do your thing, and accept the music and just have a good time. And that's what I expect from any DJ that I've ever booked for the party. And that's what they have put out. You know, we don't have crazy budgets. We don't do anything, you know, out of the ordinary. We bring a bunch of records. We have, you know, a decent setup. And we just do our thing. We put it out on the mixing board and the two turntables. You know, sometimes we have shitty days. They end as soon as we get on that stage. And it's more than just doing the party, you know. So, you know, we're going on 2 years now. And within those 2 years, you know, I've met a lot of new friends. There's been a lot of new ventures within the realm of music and other things that, you know, are personal to my life. And, you know, I hope that I can provide the sanctuary for, you know, all the dancers in the city, and, you know, can inspire some younger people that are into the music. And, you know, I keep saying it, and I just do my part.
Well, what I like too is like, because Andrew doesn't dance very much. I don't consider myself a dancer, but if I love the music, I'm going to dance. So I go to Loose Joints and I know I'm going to dance. But I find people to dance there with that I don't even know. But that's the kind of vibe you're creating, where everybody just feels like they're there together and they're like this little Loose Joints family and they're getting down. So like I said, even if you don't have anyone to go with, just go by yourself. Go dance and you'll be in the crowd dancing with everybody else and feeling the vibe. So
yeah, rent a little space on the dance floor. Rent is free, usually. usually it's free. Sometimes we do it on Friday nights. Which is the party with the purpose. And then we charge $3 and then we donate that money.
Towards the cause at that time.
Right? Yeah, towards the cause at the time. And, you know, we've had a lot of amazing causes throughout the last 2 years. So, yeah, if you haven't been, come check it out. It's in the basement of Valley Bar. You know, obviously connect on our social media, which is Grand Avenue Records, spelt out both on Instagram and Facebook. We're always putting it on blast there. And then if you can come down this weekend or on the 8th for the 2 year anniversary, which we bring out, the one and only Zernell Gilly, who is the, owner of Grimy Records, which started out of Chicago, who now lives in LA. And a little piece of history, you know, he started Crate Diggers.
Okay, so you didn't know that?
Yeah, so he started Crate Diggers, and you know, he's someone that I met at a record show. I met him at Beat Swap Meet in LA. Him and his son were DJing, and I was like, "Who are you guys?" And I was like,
"Hi, who are you?"
Yeah, who are you guys? They're just playing cool tunes, and we just became good friends. You know, he's came out here. He's played some of my parties. He played my vinyl party, and other things. So it feels good 2 years later to be able to have this party really last 2 years, and then to be able to ask my buddy to come through and throw down some tunes. And you know, I'm not just saying this. I advise you, if you're into heavy tunes, if you're into dancing, if you're into hearing something put out in a different way that only my man Grimy could do, come check it out. And I know there's a lot of Chicago folks here in Phoenix, and I, you know, it's weird because he actually introduced me to De La.
Oh, okay. Yes. We're supposed to interview De La soon. Yeah,
he introduced me to people like Boogie Knight, who actually is from Chicago too, who's on his label and on a bunch of other labels. He introduced me to, you know, all kinds of people in LA, and just, you know, he does his thing. He's got his own radio show that he does, and he's not like anybody else. And you guys will see when you come and check him out, it will be one of those things that you're like, wow, I feel like I just like had like five training sessions with like the world's top trainers, and I can't stop dancing. I want more. He's that type of DJ. So I look forward to just making that happen, and bringing him out here and hosting him again. And, you know, it's going to be a big weekend. We got the record show at Crescent Ballroom. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I could set something up for you guys with him.
Maybe that would be fun. That would be awesome. Yeah. We'd like that.
Yeah, for sure. We'd love to talk to him.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we always say. We like to get people's stories and things like that, because there's a lot of people where we've approached them to even, you know, Julian.
Yeah.
We interviewed Julian, and he's like, you want to interview me? I'm like, Julian, come on now. Like, I know you have so much to tell and, like, that people can learn from, and just interesting things people would like to know. Like, I don't know. And Julian's a trip. He's hilarious.
He's one of those guys, too. You know, he's family to me. He's definitely a person that I met here in the city.
Did you just meet him through the record store? Or?
I met him at right here. I think I met him at Third Space. That was a Grand Affair. Someone introduced me or something. I don't know. And then he like hit me to some of his mixes, and I was like, dude, who are you, and why are we not best friends? Right? You're just like, you know, just one of those people that just like knows and gets it, and, you know, can go in and out of genres flawlessly. And, you know, he's family. He's the first Grand Avenue Records employee.
Oh, Julian. And yeah. I just love his attitude.
Best ever. I mean, I truly have so much love for the guy, and, you know, I'm definitely glad that you guys connected. I've seen him connect with a bunch of my other friends, and that's how it works, guys. You know, you can't escape the web of what we're all creating here. And, you know, we'll pass it down. You know, pass it down to our daughters and, you know.
Yeah, whoever, shout out to Stella.
Yeah, shout out to my daughter Stella, my wife Ange. Yeah, I mean, it's truly important. You know, like I said to you guys last night when we were having just a conversation here, bullshitting in the store, it's truly important that you pass down any kind of little bit of knowledge that you have to the right people that will take it in and actually use it and then recycle it back out. It's very important, because otherwise cultures, subcultures, you know, they're going to be just a one-way street. There's not going to be that thick history, you know, that needs to get delivered. So then it can just get delivered again and again and again. You know, the stories might change a little bit, but the basis of it is very important. You know, each one teach one.
Yeah.
Straight up. You know, you're going to take a bunch of stuff from what you learned throughout your life, but in certain moments of life, you have to re-educate. It's very important.
That's how you keep it alive, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't be stingy and keep everything to yourself. No,
it's not about that. And if you are, well, guess what? You're probably going to fall off. You know, you're going to fall off. You're going to be looked at like an asshole. And people ain't stupid. They can tell. They can tell what you're putting out. You know, if you're coming off and you're cocky and you have ego and you're not willing to listen, take direction, know when it is your turn to, you know, do your part, you know, you're in it for the wrong reasons. You know,
it's like how you're saying you took the side rooms, you did those gigs and you had fun and you rocked those and you worked your way up and you got to the main and you're like, you know, you put your time in and you were patient and you proved yourself to yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. We're all students here. We're all students. We're all learning every day. If you're not learning, then guess what? Try a little harder. You know, find the path and just stay on it. You know, get off the path every once in a while. It's cool. It's totally natural. But, you know, at the end of the day, you have to do your part, whatever that may be. You could be the security guard. You could be the sound guy. You could be the guy doing the flyer designs, whatever. Just do it with an open heart and, you know, and don't have expectations. You can have goals. Just don't have expectations, because when you have those expectations, more than likely you're going to get let down. You know,
would you say have expectations of yourself, but not necessarily others? Because you can promise and deliver on yourself, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah. I mean, take it however you want to take it. Straight up. Take it however you want to take it. But just don't have expectations of others. You know, if you're doing a party, if you have a record label, if you have a radio show or a podcast or whatever, don't depend on others to get your shit popping. You go out and you get it. Do whatever you can. You know, I used to go out and promote 7 nights a week, right? Of course, you know, single days. And it would be nonstop. You know, I'd have 2-3 parties going on. I would go and do it. Even though I hired people to promote, I went for myself. Because guess what? I went to go do my part. So it's very important.
Well, it's like, you haven't met D-Rock. Just D-Rock. Have you, Mario D-Rock? I don't think you've met him yet. I don't think he's been here. But anyways, I think you vibe with him really good. D-Rock's been around in different scenes in San Francisco, on the East Coast, everywhere. But he lives here now. And he's just such a cool guy. And that's what he says to us, because he noticed. He's like, you know, he's like, I want to say, you know, thanks for doing the podcast. Like, it's really cool that you guys are doing that. And, you know, I know how hard it is to be out there, you know, basically interviewing people and like trying to do stuff, because we don't get paid to do this, and it's not a complaint, it's just the truth, and we're just doing it for fun and a hobby and to put stuff out there for everybody else to, so they can see stuff that's going on here and the work that went into it. Because it's easy to look at something and say like, oh, it's easy to do that or whatever, when you don't really know all the work that went behind it. So
yeah, exactly. And this is on that note, I'm the first guy to rise up when someone's like, oh, that shit's whack. They hear a record, oh, that shit's whack, right? We've heard that so many times. Oh, man, that's whack. That shit on the radio, that shit's whack. That's garbage. Well, it may not be your cup of tea, but just know there's a whole fleet of brothers and sisters that have worked on a project. Doesn't matter if it's one artist, vocalist, guitar player, whatever. You know, there's the marketing, there's the production, there's the engineer, you know, there's the record label. There's so many people. It's a project, okay? And for some people, that project is everything they could ever want in life at the moment. It helps them grow. It teaches them, you know. So, you know, to people listening and to any younger people, you know, just think about it. Next time you say those words, just think about the craft angle, okay? Think about what it took to get to that point, for that person to get out of bed, to go into the studio, or to sit down and write, or to go through that heartbreak, or whatever. They put some work in. More work than more... Than probably the person saying that shit's whack, because anybody can say that. So real talk, you know, the words are powerful, but also think about what you're saying, because in actuality, it's probably not whack. It's probably a work of art that you have to appreciate for what it is.
And maybe you're just not ready for it. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, I know that we have to go. Well, you're busy. You're a business owner, so you have to get going now. So this was a little bit different episode. We're going to try to do another one, Coco, at a later date, not like next week or anything. Maybe like in a few months, because he always has stuff going on, and we can get more into your background.
Yep.
and stuff like that.
Yeah, we could talk music. We could talk releases. We could talk record labels. It's no problem. You know, I mean, I bring out books. We could sit here and watch videos.
Yeah, for sure.
That would be fun. So, but Coco, we want to thank you for your time and thank you for being inviting to us. You know, we've been coming to the record shop for however long it's been open now. And, you know, we go to different ones and we always try to, we tell people to go to everyone. But I've said at the beginning, in the beginning episodes of the podcast, but we're a little biased. We tell people to come here. And you were actually one of the main inspirations behind the podcast because you were always tell us, if you guys want to do it, then just go do it. Like, you keep talking about it, but then just do it. Stop talking about it, you know.
Wow. That's tight.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I want to thank you guys. You know, I'm proud of you. You're how many shows deep?
25. This is 25.
Okay, 25 shows deep. Yeah, you guys are doing it. That's consistency. And, you know, I thank you on behalf of this, you know, this culture, just for just putting a little something back in. Like I said, it's very important. You know, these are the files. And sometimes people might go back into the archives and learn a piece of history, you know, because that's really what you guys are doing. You're going out and you're interviewing all these people. They're part of the scene, part of other scenes, but it all boils down to, you know, it melts back into this little subculture that we're into, you know, which is, you know, it's the tunes, the records, and, you know, we got to all just keep spinning, y'all.
Yeah, for real.
You know?
And before we leave, Coco, is there anything that you're listening to right now that you think other people should, like, that you feel like, oh, this is amazing?
Or
just anyone, or like a mix that you've listened to?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm constantly listening to other people's stuff. You know, I listen to a lot of the Red Bull stuff. There's a lot of good content in there. I'm definitely listening to all the new stuff that's on my, Mixcloud.
So you have your Mixcloud, right?
I got my Mixcloud too, which is, God, I don't even remember what it is.
I think... there's a link in your bio, isn't there? Is there?
Yeah, there's got
to
be.
Because I know, because when I would listen to your Nightmares on Wax, I think
yeah,
I just clicked
that's where it
there.
Is. Okay. That's where it is. Yeah, yeah. That's my Mixcloud. But, you know, I'm discovering. So I'm playing a lot of records from my collection that I purchased, like, you know, maybe 20 years ago. I'm, like, revisiting all this stuff. And then stuff I'm really listening to lately is a lot of, like, just jazz and soul and, like, just... funk stuff that I've had in my collection, I guess, and just kind of I knew it was dope, but I never like really went front to back on a record. But each day is different, you know. I wake up, me and my daughter listen to music every morning. You know, it could be Madonna, it could be Prince, it could be Max Roach. So having a record store, I benefit. So I'm always turning myself on to new stuff and old stuff. You know, past, present, and future should always be the driving force to anybody's collection. You know, don't ever have boundaries. Let's go out and get stuff that makes you feel good. And, you know, if you choose to present it on other people, you know, do the best that you can to, you know, put out the message.
And before we go, I have one question that I've been wanting to ask and I just haven't. Because I just keep forgetting. When you play loose joints, do you actually prepare for that? Or like, do you just mess around at home to get a vibe and you go, you bring whatever and then you're like, oh, I know what the vibe is here now? Or like, do you actually prepare and like play at home for that? Or
I always prepare. Yeah. You know, you're only as good as your knowledge of your music. You know, I can't stress that enough. So... yeah, my process has been the same process since I started. I go through the collection. I find tunes that I like. And more than likely, I know them very well front to back. Played them for years or I listen to them in mixes. I know where the points are to mix, to not mix. Sometimes you don't hit them and then you have to like go to the next bar or whatever. But I usually just put stuff together. I have like a 45 box. And usually I'll have records that I play, you know, for a while, a couple months, whatever. Sometimes a record doesn't leave my bag for a year. But I always filter things in and out and kind of play them in, you know, in different orders. But it's really feeling. I'm never like, oh, here, I got, you know, A, B, C, and D record, and, you know, I'm going to start with this, and then this will be the second record, that'll be the third record, fourth record. You know, I used to do that, but for me, the way that I DJ, it's really like the moment.
You read the room?
I read the room. That's exactly what it is. It's the moment. So, you know, I find the moment to break it down, and I find the moment to just like pick it up. You know, if there's low energy in the room, then, you know, I drop something that, you know, some percussion or something that will, you know, people can't deny, you know, to get shit going. And that, you know, that is 30 years of being behind the turntables. That's what you get from it. But, you know, I'm not going to front. Just, you know, not every time is like that. Sometimes I go in and I'm like, man, I can't put a damn record together if my life depended on it. I'm like trying way too hard. And that's just, you know, you have your moments in life and, you know, that shit reflects. And, you know, that's just really me not giving in and just being like, okay, cool. I need to center, get rid of all this other shit that's in my head and just be about this in this moment. You know, I've had it. It's happened to me at Loose Joints, you know, with, you know, last couple of months or whatever. It just happens and it's normal.
It's life. Yeah.
Dude, we're human and that's just how it is. But for the most part, I prepare. Yes. And I try to do the best that I can. And first and foremost, I do it for myself because it's my therapy. And that's, you know, that's pretty much the bottom line.
Yeah. And everybody we've taken to Loose Joints, cause we've taken different people just like, hey, you know, let's go roll through, and they love it every time. So, even Andrew's brother, that's super critical, that moved to California and came here. He was even, and we're like, oh, we know it's good cause Eddie's saying it's popping.
Nice.
But thank you so much. And, what can you give the address to the record store?
Yeah. So, we are, Grand Avenue Records is on the historic Grand Avenue strip right next door to the old Bikini Lounge, and we are 1504 Grand Avenue, Phoenix, Arizona, 85007 if you need that. And we are closed, Sunday, Monday, but we're open Tuesday through Saturday, 11 to 6. But you can always call, because I live across the street, and if you're fiending and need to, you know, you're from out of town or something or whatever, I'm cool like that. I'll come over here and open the doors. It's not a problem.
Yeah, so go come down here and have a dig and have a talk to Coco. He's always busy, but he always makes sure to say hi. And, you know, if he has time, he'll have good conversation with you and things like that. And, you know, Grand Avenue Records, it's contributing here to the community, and we always want to highlight things like that. And like we said, thank you so much, Coco, for opening your doors to us and for being friendly and just for being awesome and being a positive force in the community, because that's definitely always needed anywhere. And is there anything you want to say, Andrew?
No, man. I think we're good. Okay. I appreciate it. They really, really appreciate you letting us come hang out with you today.
Yeah. Right on.
And then next, the record show.
Okay. So, yeah, just to recap, we have a record show December 8th going down at the Crescent Ballroom from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. We got 45 vendors confirmed. We got 6 DJs, and we also have the after party, which will be the official birthday to Loose Joints and Grand Avenue Records, and that will be going down from 10 to 2 a.m. in the basement at Valley Bar. And you can look all those spots up on social media. They're very popular places here in the downtown Phoenix district. Or just call the shop, and yeah, I'll hook you up.
Yeah. And anything, any last words for people in podcast land?
Yeah, just you know, keep doing your thing. You know, we need it. We need the education, we need the communication, and, you know, we need everybody doing their part at all levels. So thank you to you guys, and you know, I look forward to your 100th show. I hope I get to come on that episode.
We will keep that in mind and keep going.
Yeah. Awesome. So thanks guys for listening. Thank you to Coco and Grand Avenue Records and Loose Joints and the Downtown Phoenix Record Show. We're all going to be there, and there's going to be tons more people there, so make sure to stop through, say hi, grab some records, and books. Palabras is going to be there selling some really cool books, and there's just going to be all kinds of vendors there selling records different ways.
Yeah, we might be doing like some field like interviews with different people. So if you see one of us like walking around with headphones on and a recorder and a microphone, we might just be talking to people in general. So we'll be there with the podcast and selling our own personal records, but we will be recording
and
as
the
Crate
Creepers will have a table, so we're going to share one with the podcast since I'm kind of dual in both. But thank you so much for listening, and don't stop digging and just keep spinning.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.